Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Welcome to First Bite, our Detroit Lions preview podcast for Pride of Detroit, the SB Nation website for all things Detroit Lions. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I'm the managing editor over there at Pride of Detroit. With me, as always, is my co-host Ryan Matthews at Ryan underscore POD. How you doing, Ryan?
I would say that I'm doing well, but I'm not doing nearly as festive as our guest tonight.
Yes, and we'll get to him in a second. This is our preview podcast where we're normally preview the upcoming matchup between the Lions and their next opponent. But seeing as the Lions are 4-7, seeing as everything has already been blown up, it's time to preview the offseason. And so we are going to preview the offseason first with our favorite head coaching candidate. We talked about it on our last podcast. We were all in agreement that Robert Saleh is currently at the top of our list. So we wanted to get a Saleh expert. And so we have with us Matt Maiocco of the NBC Sports Bay Area. He's been a 49ers beat writer for 26 years. Am I getting that right?
I believe you are, Jeremy.
That's incredible. He's at Maiocco, that's M-A-I-O-C-C-O-N-B-C-S on Twitter. Matt, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem at all. And, I think you're... You can join that club that I think Richard Sherman, he might actually be the president of the Robert Saleh fan club, and let's get him a head coaching job thing. So maybe you and Richard Sherman can get together and fly the Saleh flag.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to get him on the show at some point, and maybe you can also help us out with that. But for now, as someone who's obviously covered the team as long as you have, I think you'll definitely do for the moment. So let's just start out with a really simple question. What kind of person is Robert Saleh? Because I think personality is something high on the Lions fans' wish list, given everything that's happened.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever heard anybody say a bad word about him. Yeah, he's a really solid guy. He has the big family. He and his wife have six kids. As you probably well know, he grew up in Dearborn. Grew up a Lions fan, has always been kind of in tune with the program there. He's a very enthusiastic guy. He's not necessarily a great quote. He's not going to throw people under the bus. He's from my standpoint, it's probably been, a little bit to a fault where, he'll pump guys up even when you know that maybe they don't deserve to be pumped up a little bit. But I think what will help him when he, and I'm assuming he will get a head coaching job at some point, whether in your town or somewhere else, I think he'll have a good time I think he'll do a good job of putting together a staff too, because he is such a good guy, a likable guy. He's not going to do anything stupid. He's going to be well prepared, smart guy. So, I'm kind of with you. I'm in the I take the position that he's certainly, when you see the list of candidates on a yearly basis, this year of all years, when you look at where the 49ers are, let's face it, what got Robert Saleh on everybody's radar was the really good defense they had last year and the success they had last year. And he was a finalist for the Cleveland Browns job. But I think in a lot of ways, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, in a lot of ways, he's done a better job this year because you know, it's been more about massaging the, you know, the spirit of the team and keeping them focused and keeping them without making excuses. And, you know, when they have every reason to make a lot of excuses because they've lost so many players and they continually lose players, but he has them playing exceptionally hard and the defense is still the strength of the team.
Well, it's great that you mentioned that, Matt, because I think that's a good springboard for the question that I wanted to ask you. And, you know, you talk about the, you know, the enthusiastic personality that he is, the kind of fiery guy that he is that we see on the sidelines during game day. A lot of Lions fans are not too in tune with maybe who he is in practice. So, like, what kind of coaches Salah in practice? Does he kind of carry that same kind of enthusiastic personality every single day of the week he checks into the building, or does he turn it up and turn it down?
No, he's a hands-on coach. You know, he's always talking to his players. You know, I mentioned Richard Sherman earlier. I mean, there are times, you know, I see it all the time. Of course, you know, now that the season started and, you know, I don't watch them practice anymore. But, you know, like say in training camp, you know, whenever it's a special teams session, you know, he's talking to Richard Sherman and they're, you know, they're engaged in conversations. So he listens to, you know, his players. He takes input from them. You know, probably one of the more impressive things, and we've all seen it, and I was just thinking about this the other day, is that you always see, you know, when the 49ers, when they've been in bad spells, and I've covered a few of those years where they just simply have not been good, you always see, you know, guys running open way down the field and one player, you know, throws his hands up, you know, and looks at another player. And, you know, it's like that blame game, right? You know, that where, you know, you aren't supposed to do that. You know, I'm the closest guy to this play. I'm going to be the one that people think screwed up. Well, you don't see that with the 49ers. And a lot of it is because he has a really good grasp, I think, of what the guys can do. And he doesn't want to put them in positions where it sets them up to fail. You know, so you don't see those mental breakdowns from the 49ers very often. And, you know, I think that something that he's thought about or he's kind of wrestled with in the past is, I mean, it's been a pretty basic defense. You know, the Seattle defense that he's implemented here is a pretty basic defense, and they don't do a whole lot of things, but, you know, this year they have started doing stuff more. I think he kind of basically, you know, gives them enough, has them well prepared, but gives them enough where he's confident and more importantly, they're confident that he's not giving them too much and they can play fast. You know, his thing is, you know, he talks about extreme violence. You know, he wants his guys to play violently. You know, it's kind of when he first started saying that, I was like, geez, you know, yeah, I don't know about extreme violence. You know, that's not exactly a great, you know, PC term to be using in this day and age, but yeah. You know, his guys play hard and they play hard for him and they buy in. And that's why you hear a guy like Richard Sherman. And I'm sure if I talk to, you know, how many ever guys are on the defensive unit, you know, 26, 27 guys, how many ever are on that roster? I don't think, and even if you gave them truth serum and said, you can tell me, I won't tell anybody else, I would guarantee you that all those guys would speak highly of him and support him and think that he should be a head coach.
Well, you just kind of touched on it there a little bit, the whole play fast, play violent, but in terms of maybe more schematically, what would you describe Salah's kind of defensive philosophy to be?
Yeah, I mean, it is the Seattle scheme, and it's not a whole lot of smoke and mirrors. It's, you know, it's been cover three. You know, you don't necessarily blitz a whole lot. Now, you need players to do that because the 49ers defense in 2017 and 2018 looked a whole lot different than it did in 2019. So, you know, you got to – you know, I don't know who would come in as the general manager there, but I mean, it could be Adam Peters, you know, from the 49ers. It could be someone over with Seattle. It could be somebody like Scott Fitterer or Trent Kirshner. You know, those would probably be my guesses. I mean, if Detroit does this the right way, they're not going to be pairing two guys who don't know each other. Robert Saleh is an easy guy to get along with, but I'm sure as a head coach, you want to have your GM see eye to eye with you and know exactly what you're looking for. And sometimes that kind of takes a GM who's going to say, well, I want this guy because he's the better player in my opinion. But, you know, this guy might be a little bit less of a player, but he certainly fits better what they're trying to do schematically. So that's the kind of the tug of war or that game that has to be played. But you need to get a GM and a head coach who are on the same page. So with Saleh, one of the interesting things he did this last year was, I think, you know, as he built the system over several years and everybody's on the same page. Now this year he's kind of expanding more on it. And, you know, this year for the first time, and I don't ever recall in my time covering the team that a defensive coordinator has done this. And I don't know that it's very widespread around the NFL, but he's been playing the corners field and boundary. Are you guys familiar with those terms?
Not necessarily.
So I guess it's more of a college thing, and because of the hash marks, and I think probably because a lot of times in college you're dealing with one cornerback who might be an NFL caliber cornerback and the other one who's not. But what you do is you basically, depending on where the ball is on the hash marks, there's going to be a wide side of the field and a shallow or less wide side of the field. And you put your better cover guy on the wide side of the field and basically giving him more responsibility, more territory to cover, more, in essence, more routes to cover. And then you use the other cornerback on the side of the field where the boundary is, where you basically have a defender helping you, meaning the sideline. So he's done a lot of that this year, and it's really seemed to work for this team. So that there would be an example of someone who has his system, who knows what he wants, knows exactly what he wants with that defense, and building on it on a yearly basis to give you different wrinkles. They're blitzing a little bit more. They kind of have to because they've lost a lot of the pass rush. And I mean, the crazy thing to me is, you look at all the guys they've lost defensively, it's still a pretty good defense. It's still the strength of the team. And, the Rams are not a bad team. Rams don't have a bad offense, but twice this season, including Sunday, they made them look extremely ordinary. So, that's part of it. But I don't know, there's part of being a head coach where, is he going to be calling defenses? Is he going to be hands-on on defense? I would suspect he would be. And then the question would be, what's the offensive side of the ball going to look like?
Yep. Those are all big questions to have. Go ahead, Ryan.
All questions that we thought we had answered here in Detroit when Matt Patricia was brought in, that's for sure. But you bring up a lot of interesting things, and the first thing that I want to kind of move over to is the one interesting thing you said is he's probably doing his best job this year that he's done in his entire tenure because of him having to do less with more. No Nick Bosa, DeForest Buckner has moved on, dealing with so many different injuries. Now, you take a look at the first 2 years that Saleh was defensive coordinator in San Francisco, and the 49ers defense wasn't quite there. Do you think it's just a matter of him implementing that system and getting the players to buy in and to understand the system? Or do you really think that, he was just so privileged to have, a defensive line last season that had Bosa and Armstead and Buckner and just this incredible pass rush where he didn't need to blitz and he could kind of sit back and he could play more of that cover three and that field and boundary that you mentioned.
Well, I mean, I think, Ryan, what I'm saying is that he's done it both ways now, right? I mean, he had the talent, a lot of talent. I mean, that defensive line they had last year.
Oh, it's all world, right? Yeah.
I mean, think about it. You know, on third downs, you have D Ford at one end, you have Nick Bosa at the other, and rushing from the interior, you have Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner. You don't have to do a whole lot. And now this year, they've had to manufacture some things. And part of why I said that this is even a better job is that, you know, there have been no excuses. You know, they could be, you know, the moment that, and Solomon Thomas, you know, he was, you know, he's not a number three overall pick, right? We all know that. He was picked there in 2017, but he's, you know, he's a fine backup defensive lineman. In a span of three plays in week two, Nick Bosa left the game with a torn ACL and Solomon Thomas left the game with a torn ACL. But, you know, I know that they probably take some time after the game and throw back a hard one and bemoan the fact that they've lost some players, but then they just roll up their sleeves and they get back to work the next day. And Saleh's personality is such a positive personality that I don't think he'd let, you know, those guys get down in the dumps. That's why I said that I think he's done probably an even better job, is because from this team of all teams, you wouldn't expect them to be where they are, you know, in the NFL, you know, the rankings with total yards and whatnot. So, I mean, the fact that they've done it and they've done it, you know, in a different way, I think they're mixing up their coverages a lot more than they have in the past. You know, like I said, they're blitzing more. You know, they've had just a lot of new guys that they're shuttling in into the action. But I also think a big part of being a head coach is just kind of managing the personalities and managing the temperament of the team and being a person. You know, you guys would know a lot more about it than me, but I look around the league and I see coaches that seem to have lost touch with the human element. And I almost kind of feel like, you know, Bill Belichick, as great as he is, I almost kind of think like his assistant coaches don't understand that, you know, yeah. Right? I mean, and from what I understand, you know, Belichick's not a bad guy to play for at all, but it's almost like they think that the caricature of Belichick is the way
right.
You have to run an organization. And again, like, you guys would know a lot more about it than me, but from afar, it just seemed like Matt Patricia was not even, you know, he just didn't want to build relationships and get to know people on an individual basis. I could be wrong, but that was kind of my thought of it. And I can guarantee you Robert Saleh is the opposite of that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's what I was wondering. I was like, but the clincher here is that night and day comparison. So that's music to our ears.
Am I right about Patricia?
I mean, he definitely got better at it. I think the first year was a really, really rough year in which he went in with all the wrong intentions, I think. And he did improve in the final couple of years, but there was still, I think, some residual feeling from the people that were there in his first year into year three. We obviously saw it with a guy like Darius Slay, maybe even Kenny Galladay a little bit.
Jeremy, you are who you are. You know, yeah. If you show your team
exactly
a person in year one and year two, I don't care what you do in year three, you're still that guy. Yeah. And so here's the one thing that I've learned is every time, you know, every head coaching position I've ever had to cover, the team is always looking for the opposite. Right. You're always looking for the opposite. And sometimes it's, you know, in the case of Patricia, obviously a defensive minded head coach, the thought would be we'll get an offensive coach who's a people person. Well, Saleh's not an offensive coach. And I've actually spoken to him about this in the past, is that, you know, he doesn't believe, and of course he's selling himself, but he doesn't believe that a defensive minded head coach, a guy with that defensive background, he doesn't believe that that's a detriment on the offensive side, because he knows what the kind of offenses that give him trouble.
Right.
Now it's implementing, you know, getting the guy from the system and having a line of succession. And I think everywhere you look, I mean, look at the teams that have had success in the NFL, you know, sustained, prolonged success. I mean, do you even know who the offensive coordinators are? I can't even tell you who Pete Carroll's offensive coordinator is. You know, and I never can, but I know one thing. They run a similar system, you know, every year. Doesn't matter who, they're always going to be good. And, you know, Belichick, I mean, you know, there is some time, obviously it's been Josh McDaniels for a long time, but you know, it's like you have your system, you have your beliefs, and you have a line of succession. Because I guarantee you one thing, if the Detroit Lions are winning under Robert Saleh, someone's going to hire his offensive coordinator. Right. And then he would, I bet he's already thinking, I know he has a big binder of information and he has the list of this is who I want to be my position coaches. And if I can't get him, here's number two, number three, number four. I guarantee you he already has a list of, geez, probably a dozen offensive coordinators. I'm just making that up, but I bet he does.
I mean, you touched on so many things there that I'd like to expand more upon, but just, you know, kind of to recap, the fact that he's been adaptable in this year is something that I think Lions fans are going to find very appealing, considering the Lions have not been very adaptable with their defense and their current lack of talent. The leadership obviously is huge. We just kind of covered it all. Matt Patricia, not a very good job at that. Have a guy like Saleh is huge. The last thing I want to touch about before we go to our first break is the Detroit connection. Obviously, you mentioned you grew up in Dearborn. I think everyone in Lions land knows now that there's that local connection. Is that something that you hear him talk about a lot? Is that something that he brings up, whether it's his Lions fandom or his family back there?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I've definitely talked to him about his family. I mean, that's the big part of him in that community he grew up. You know, and I also know that after the 2018 season, you know, I wasn't necessarily expecting any changes to the coaching staff, but I don't think he knew Chris Kocurek, but knew of him because he followed the Lions.
Yeah.
And I think in watching Chris Kocurek's defensive line, I think he always felt like, man, that's somebody I want on my staff. And when he became available after the 2018 season, the 49ers weren't expected to make a change on their coaching staff, but they did to go get him. So he definitely has his finger on the pulse of what's happening with the Detroit Lions and that area. And, you know, his family is still there.
All right. That's Matt Maiocco. We're going to come right back. Talk more with Matt about Robert Saleh. We're going to get into your questions. So if you're watching us live, be sure to throw some questions there in the chat, and we will be right back on our preview podcast, the off-season preview podcast. We'll be right back.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
And we're back with First Bite, our now off-season preview podcast. We're here with Matt Maiocco of NBC Sports Bay Area to talk more about Robert Saleh, our favorite Lions head coaching candidate. We're getting into your fan questions now. A couple from Zach M. on Twitter. He first asked, to what extent did Saleh build the staff in San Francisco, or was this more determined by Shanahan?
No, I think the defensive coaching staff, I think Robert Saleh had a lot of say in that, especially the comings and goings. You know, I think D'Amico Ryans was Saleh. That might be somebody that he would look to bring to whatever job he gets. And I think Koserik. I think Shanahan knows, right? I mean, Shanahan's an offensive coach. He knows you can't install what you want if you're not given, you know, the right pieces. But I will say this too, is that, you know, Saleh was not, he was not hired to become the defensive coordinator. You know, Kyle Shanahan hired him for his staff. Saleh was let go in Jacksonville. And Saleh was hired by the 49ers, but then Kyle Shanahan went and looked at, I think Wade Phillips, one of them. I don't know if he was, but well, Gus Bradley certainly was. Mm-hmm. There were a few other guys. Gus Bradley's the one that really comes to mind. And when he wanted Saleh on his staff, Saleh went there knowing at the worst he was going to be the linebackers coach. And all along, he was telling Kyle, I'm your best bet for defensive coordinator. And what happened the first couple of years, I mean, there are a lot of questions early on about, you know, is he going to remain the defensive coordinator? Is he going to be fired? Does Kyle Shanahan have to get somebody else? And Kyle Shanahan was steadfast in his commitment to Saleh, and you know, people would say, well, you know, what do you see in him? Well, why do you keep him as the defensive coordinator? And he was like, because I know him, you know, I know how he prepares. I know the job he's doing. You know, us in the media, we're not privy to everything, but with Kyle Shanahan, you know, Kyle's pretty hard headed. If he didn't like the way the defense was being run, he would let the world know. And, you know, on those game plan weeks, you know, the course of the week, you know, he knew exactly what was being installed for the defense. He bought in, and it was just a matter of getting the right players, you know, getting decent players. That roster had to churn over. I mean, they had to bring in a lot of new guys on that defense. And I think Shanahan always felt like if we can get the players, Saleh will coach them up. And you know, last year was the year that they got the players.
Yeah. And speaking of coaching him up, we have a question from Sean at @fall1n_1_. And he mentions, you know, he'd like to hear about how Saleh has adjusted his scheme this year with so many injuries. And the one other thing I want to add to that question, Matt, is how important is Fred Warner to that 49ers defense?
Yeah. Well, first off, Ryan, it's Saleh. It's not Saleh. We got to get that right. Guy's going to be a coach. You don't want to like anger him day one.
It's a little trickier than Patricia, but
yeah. Yes. I'm sorry. I was already planning to bust your chops about the pronunciation. The part about Warner, I'll get to that. No, Fred Warner's, you know, he's a guy that, you know, he's a smart guy. It takes smart, you know, guys. If Fred Warner is like a CEO type. So he's going to want somebody, you know, running the middle linebacker position, the guy with the green dot on his helmet, he's going to want somebody there to take charge. So, you know, I don't know if that guy is there with the Lions. You know, I don't know how much, I haven't studied the Lions roster, but you know, how much, you know, basically what you have to do is kind of figure out what you have, which guys you can get rid of, which guys you can bring in. And it's not a 1-year thing. You know, it will take a couple of years to get it the way you want to do it, because, you know, there obviously there's just some contracts you can't get rid of, some players that you want you can't get, but maybe you can next year. So I mean, it's a process, but certainly the middle linebacker position is a big one, as is you know, the safety, the free safety position is a big one. You know, they call that position the eraser. It's what Earl Thomas played with Seattle. It's what Jimmy Ward plays now. And the 49ers, you know, have made a, you know, they made a commitment the last couple of years to bring Jimmy Ward back and keep him around, because, you know, they consider him a really good fit for what they're doing. And what was the first part of that, Ryan?
Well, the first part of the question was just, you know, what has he been able to do with, you know, adjusting his scheme? You talked about his adaptability, but specifically this year with so many injuries, has he, you said he's not much of a coach who blitzes a whole lot, but has he changed that a bit this year?
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know the numbers, but I would suspect, you know, the blitz numbers are up. You know, like I said, they're disguising more stuff. They're not just cover three. You know, they're doing that boundary and field with the corners. So there are wrinkles, mm-hmm. but ultimately I think the, you know, his principles are to have everybody on the same page. You know, you can't have nine guys playing one way and two guys playing another way. They all have to be on the same page, you know, take as much off their plate as possible and just allow them to go play fast and physical.
I'm going to combine a couple questions here, because we talked a little bit about him potentially building a staff, and you mentioned he did that a little bit in San Francisco. I think a lot of people are interested in what he could bring offensively, because you look at Kyle Shanahan's offense and think a lot of people are like, yeah, I'd love that. So do you think he has the capability of pulling, you know, a couple people in our chat, say like a guy like Mike McDaniel, Mike LaFleur? Do you think it's possible that he could potentially bring in a good staff to Detroit if need be?
I do. Yeah. I think that, you know, now with the way the, you know, the NFL put in that rule, it used to be if a coach was under a contract, even, you know, a position coach under contract, the team could block him from becoming a coordinator. That's different this year. And even coordinator in title who don't have coordinator responsibilities cannot be blocked. So I'll give you the one name that I would think would be his offensive coordinator is Mike LaFleur. Matt LaFleur, the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, is mm-hmm. Robert Saleh's best friend. They were in each other's wedding. They basically, well, they coached together at Central Michigan. They're really good friends. And I think Robert Saleh brought LaFleur into the NFL. I think, I think Saleh went to the Houston Texans, and LaFleur came in, and then the whole Kyle Shanahan. Well, that's when Kyle Shanahan, you know, first met Matt LaFleur, and then later Mike LaFleur came aboard. And so my guess is that Saleh would want to have Mike LaFleur as his offensive coordinator. And basically you'd have a San Francisco, you know, Northern Midwest, you know, you'd have the 49. Well, it would be basically, you know, the Seattle Seahawks defense and the Kyle Shanahan offense.
I'd take that.
Yeah, I'm interested in something like that coming to Detroit for sure.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I know Kyle Shanahan got a delivery dropped off at the house.
No worries. Dogs are common guests.
We're a pet-friendly podcast here.
Yeah. And then it's a matter of just the line of succession, right? Like who mm-hmm. else could he bring? You know, generally some entry level coaches. I would think that it would be obviously guys that he'd worked with in the past. And I think it'd probably be a young, vibrant coaching staff, high energy. You know, it's so funny now that it used to be I'd go to the NFL scouting combine and you'd see all these crusty old coaches and, you know, and you know, same faces every year, just the weathered skin and everything else. And it even go, you know, for the personnel departments too. And now you see these like bookworm types, you know, young guys who, you know, look like they're fresh out of high school. And so, you know, it's kind of the new wave, and Mike LaFleur, you know, Mike LaFleur and Mike McDaniel kind of fit that mold. But LaFleur is going to be a head coach in the NFL someday. Yeah, he just kind of has that feel about him. He's a bright guy, and I think he's ready to call plays. So I think I'd be a little bit surprised if he's not the offensive coordinator wherever Robert Saleh ends up.
All right, I think we got a couple more questions before we head out. At Finchie on Twitter asks, basically, he just wants someone who's aggressive and not, as he says, conservative as hell. Obviously, you don't know, you probably can't know for sure, but you know, if you know the line, if he's a head coach, he's faced with a lot of fourth and, you know, everyone's obsessed with these like fourth and one situations. Is he the kind of guy that's going to line up and say go for it every time, or is he, or you know, is he more of a conservative approach kind of guy?
He's pragmatic. You know, he's not going to do anything stupid. But my guess is, as my dog is climbing up on my microphone here, my guess is that he's also the kind of guy who, what does he call it? He says that sometimes he blacks out, meaning he gets so excited on the sideline and he's, you know, jumping around and doing stuff that he kind of almost loses, you know, control. Now, obviously, that's not a great thing for a head coach in the NFL.
Right.
And obviously he's exaggerating, but I think that he probably would be the kind of guy that says, you guys want to go for it? Then let's go. You know, he's not going to do that every time, you know, fourth and six at the 50-yard line in the second quarter. He's not going to do that. But I think that he will create kind of a buy-in and an accountability where he's going to give those guys more often than not. He's going to say, if you guys want to do it, do it. And then what happens then is, you know, there's that buy-in that if it fails, Robert will, I guarantee you, in the media sessions, he will take 100% of the blame for it. But meanwhile, the players will take 100% of the blame for it because they're the ones who wanted to do it. So I think that that's where like that personal relationship, being a guy that guys want to play for, I think that's where that can really help him out.
That's Mike Mayocco from the NBC Sports area. Awesome job. Before we let you go, I have to ask one non-Sala question.
Sure.
As you are a Hall of Fame voter, we're coming up to Calvin Johnson's eligibility.
A tough one.
Is Calvin Johnson a first balloter? I have to put your feet to the coals here.
I don't know. I don't know where I'll go with that. We're at, or I just voted for the final 15, which is the 15 guys who will get in the room. It's going to be tough. I mean, I can't speak for everybody because I'm always surprised. But you know, when I left that room last year, I kind of felt like it was either going to be John Lynch or Steve Atwater, and it was Atwater. So you know, you've heard maybe some voters talk about the queue. You know how, you know, if a guy waits so long, you need to kind of get him to the front line before everybody passes him up. I will go in with a very open mind, and I'm really interested to hear that conversation. I mean, there's no doubt that Calvin Johnson's a Hall of Famer, but you know, with the draft class as it's currently comprised, will I personally come up with five guys who I think for this particular year should be in ahead of him? I can't answer that for sure. But I think it's borderline. I can't tell you for sure I'm going to vote for him in that final five. But at the same point, I'm not going to tell you that absolutely not. I think he's, you know, I look at it from this way too. Is that, you know, I'm looking at the linebackers. You know, if Patrick Willis makes it to the 15, I'll be talking about him. I mean, it's kind of these, you know, these supernova guys, you know, and Tony Baselli was a supernova, right?
I mean, just really bright. Yep.
Awesome, right? Awesome for a short period of time, but awesome. Calvin Johnson, a little bit longer, but kind of in that same conversation. Patrick Willis, that same conversation. 4 years, 5 years down the road. Luke Kuechly, same conversation. So I think he'll get in. I don't know if it'll be this year. I know that's what your question was.
It's okay. You don't have to give me your ballot right now.
But I'm not sure it's going to be this year.
Got it. All right, Mike, Matt, sorry. Before we go, let me give you the kind of the floor to tell everyone where they can find you, what sort of stuff that you can offer, and maybe if you've got anything specifically Salah related that they could read.
Yeah. You know what? If you probably do a Google search for 49ers Talk, that's my podcast, 49ers Talk. I work for NBC Sports Bay Area. You can read my stuff at NBCSportsBayArea.com. But if you do Google 49ers Talk, type in, you know, 49ers Talk, Robert Saleh, and my podcast with him should show up. It was a couple of years ago now, kind of a get to know you kind of thing. And I mean, it's an interesting story. You know, he was kind of miserable in a Wall Street job, and you know, a banking type of job, and just didn't, you know, wanted to follow his passion. His passion was football. And, you know, certainly he's happy he went that direction. The 49ers are happy he went that direction. And who knows, you know, maybe a year from now, the Detroit Lions will be happy.
Again, that's Matt Maiocco at Maiocco NBC CS, or I'm sorry, NBCS on Twitter. Thanks again for joining us. That's some great information. And thank you all for listening. We will be back on Sunday after the Lions-Bears games to give you a full breakdown of that and talk about more about what's ahead for this Detroit Lions team. But until then, it's chaos. Be kind.